Hi friends, happy Friends of France Tuesday. Hope you're all doing well. It's Christmas and Kwanzaa week for all those who celebrate. The holiday season has truly been upon us, and I think holidays are really the season for spending time with family. Whether the one you're born into or your chosen one. I was able to spend Thanksgiving with my dad's side in LA, but I'll be spending Christmas Eve and Christmas with friends who are like family now. My mom, who was also a nurse, retired a few years ago, and has lived in Asia ever since, so she spends her holiday there. Speaking of family, today's episode is quite related to family. In a harrowing way, I guess. Cancer. What a word. And a scary one too, of course. During our second season of the podcast, we had Dr. Sanjay Juneja on, an oncologist hematologist, who spoke to us mainly about the biology of cancer and the pain it brings, not only to patients themselves, but also to their loved ones and caregivers. He even directed us to a book about cancer titled The Emperor of All Maladies. How true that is. Cancer is such a scary word because many times it is seen as a death sentence. And this is true for many. My dad actually passed away from cancer that metastasized. My grandmother also passed away from leukemia. So truly, cancer is reasonably related to family. It even makes me think at times, will it be me too? It might be a dark thought, but as a nurse, when you know too much, it can be scary too. So, cancer. What is it really? Why are there so many forms? Why is it so hard to cure, even with chemotherapy? Is it mostly family or genetically inherited, or is it environmental and lifestyle factors that we choose? As we mainly spoke about the biology and effects of cancer in season 2, in today's episode, we tackle more about the period before even getting cancer, the lifestyle influences and the risk factor. And I am so honored and excited to have an excellent expert and dear friend to speak to us all about this today. Dr. Timothy Tiutan, better known as Dr. Tim Online, is a board-certified internal medicine physician specializing in oncology hospital medicine at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center here in New York City, truly the number one cancer hospital here in the city. Dr. Tim is also an assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College and further extends his passion for online education with nearly 2 million followers on social media. He is also the author of The Mediterranean Diet, a medical contributor at CBS News, the official media spokesperson of the American Cancer Society, and a member of the World Health Organization FIDES Network, a select group from around the world who combat misinformation in the media and support health initiatives for communities globally. An icon for real. I am so excited for you to hear my conversation with Dr. Tim today. Okay, let's get to learning. Imagine if skincare could do more, but with less. Meet Remsen, a New York brand made in South Korea, where world-leading innovation meets the no-nonsense energy of New York City. Their essential duo keeps it effective and efficient with high-quality ingredients. Their Gentle Greens Cleanser, featuring green tea, centella, and aloe, cleanses without drying. And the multitasking peptide moisturizer combines bakuchiol, ceramides, and a clinically proven dose of peptides in a single lightweight step to hydrate, strengthen the skin barrier, and help prevent visible signs of aging. Both are safe for sensitive and acne-prone skin types, vegan, cruelty-free, and beautifully packaged with sustainable materials, making the set a great gift. You can get 20% off your first purchase on remsenskincare.com. That's remsenskincare.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. One-time use and cannot be combined with other codes. Get maximal results with minimal steps. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Friends of France podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I am so honored to have such an amazing and special person today. I think my heart is fluttering, not in the bad kind. Hopefully. We have a good friend, internal medicine physician, author, assistant professor, influencer, an icon. I mean, you know it, the Dr. Tim. Hi, Tim.
You're too kind. Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
Of course. Thank you for joining me. Oh my gosh. Well, first, I know your face is probably spreading across people's phones, getting their health education online, which is so amazing. Thank you for doing that. But I guess I wanted to ask,
What made Dr. Tim, Dr. Tim? Like, what led you to this?
That's a good question. There are a lot of different factors that led to the social platform that I've built. I guess taking it a step back, I'm originally from the Philippines. I'm Filipino Chinese, and I immigrated to the U.S. when I was really young and kind of had that classic humble beginnings kind of background. And so after all of my training, years and years of training in school, I finished. And when I was a full-fledged attending, I realized, you know, I really wanted to give back to the community and put an even playing field for people from all across different backgrounds. And so I really wanted to provide people with access, equal access to good health information. And we all know there's a lot of misinformation online. Mm-hmm. And when I started, it was kind of in the height of COVID. And I just wanted to put my two cents out there, not expecting anything at all. And it kind of blew up very quickly. And I was really pleasantly surprised at how much people really gravitated towards really, I would say, for lack of a better word, almost morbid, because who likes talking about cancer and chronic illness and type of topics I didn't feel like, you know, people really wanted to hear. And so I was pleasantly surprised people really tuned in and it kind of took off.
Yeah, I resonate with that a lot because the podcast, actually the very first season, we started right around the time of COVID as well. You know, I was working in the COVID ICUs and working 13-hour shifts. Night after night, you know, how many lives lost, how much CPR you do per night. And then I get on the train and then on my phone, it's like, COVID is a hoax video. I was like, oh my goodness. So that's when I saw, oh my gosh, we need people with actual education and training and the expertise to come on and talk about their fields or different fields, which is how Friends of France came about. And it's just full circle that you are with me today too.
Yeah. And so I guess we were both probably like working nights because I used to work nights as well. And I, at the time of COVID, I lived in, I lived in around the Midtown area. And so as we know, those pictures where it was fully empty in Times Square, like I used to go back early in the morning or late at night. In that.
Yeah, I was working at Mount Sinai at that time, and they actually made a stay in some of the hotels around Times Square. And I remember walking through Times Square, like walking to the train station. It's like you could hear a pin drop, right? It's like no cars, no people. We've come so far, and it's led us to, I guess, this world and this universe now in social media where we see so many medfluencers, a lot of healthcare professionals talking about healthcare education, and you are one of them and you do it so amazingly. And you talk a lot, not just about general health, but specifically about oncology. I know being an oncology hospitalist, what led you to this specific field within internal medicine and research?
So when I was going through all of my training and education, I thought I wanted to become a medical oncologist. And then when I got into my internal medicine training program and residency, I realized that a few things. One is that I really, really like, yes, general cancer biology. And I did years of research in the field. And then I realized I also like inpatient hospital medicine. So taking care of sicker people who are sick enough to be admitted in the hospital. And then I really like the area of what we call palliative medicine. For folks out there, it focuses a lot on symptom management, emotionally, physically, mentally, for anyone with a serious condition or illness. And so hospital medicine, oncology, and palliative medicine, internal medicine, all into one, it kind of came to my field of oncology hospital medicine, which I love. And I think I have the best job in the world, really. Mm-hmm. I think I have a lot of perspective when it comes to life. And I'm sure you do as well, being in healthcare. And I feel like being in the cancer health space, there's just so many opportunities to feel privileged in our everyday life.
Yeah. You know, I think the word cancer is one of those words. It's probably the biggest fear of some people, right? Even those who do not have it, or even though they didn't witness a family member or a loved one have it. There's just something about the word cancer that it sounds like a death sentence, literally, and probably was many, many years ago. And for those who may not know, what is cancer in itself? What actually happens to the body when someone has cancer of whatever kind it may be?
Well, first of all, thanks for bringing it up that people, there's so many connotations that come along when people hear the word cancer. And a lot of what I'm trying to do online is to make health information, especially related to cancer, a lot less scary. Mm-hmm. I think that when people have more access to information and it's less of an unknown, then it's just much more of a digestible diagnosis when inevitably about 1 in 5 people in the world will develop cancer in their lifetime, per the WHO a few years ago, and even more frequently, at least in the United States. It's an unfortunate reality that we all have to grasp. So what is cancer? I mean, if you really distill it down to a simple definition, it's really an overgrowth of cells in the body that's not supposed to be there. It could be normal cells that then mutate and change into different types and then just kind of proliferate or increase in number. And that's essentially what cancer is. And there are several types of reasons why people get cancer, mutations of different types. For example, you can have a hereditary form of cancer through your genes. You inherited them from your parents. BRCA, for example, the BRCA gene is something we talk about a lot in the media. And that's one main reason people develop cancer. And then you can have different lifestyle choices that can increase your risk of cancer.
Yeah. And I think that's something that people are always trying to navigate, especially online. I guess this is why we have so many Reddit forums and so many discourses online, is that very question of, and I think it also roots from that worry and from the fear of, will I get cancer? Someone in my family had cancer, and especially me, like my dad passed away from malignant lymphoma. So there's always that thing in the back of my mind where I'm like, how much of this is actually genetic and passed down, or how much of it is lifestyle? And I guess within that context of, I guess when it comes to risk factors and causes, and I know it varies throughout different types of cancers, in regards to that, what are the most common myths about cancer and I guess the risk factors that you wish people understood better?
First of all, I'm sorry to hear about your father, your dad. Yeah. Really, I'm sorry. It's definitely a horrible disease. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad we're really kind of unpacking a lot of what we're talking about today. So there's a lot to unpack in what you just asked right now. First of all, a lot of people online, I often hear people say, you know, it doesn't matter what I do because cancer, I'm going to get it anyways because my brother, my father, whoever it may be I'm related to got it. So what I would say about that is, like I said earlier, is that some cancers are genetically predisposed. People are genetically predisposed to getting certain cancers, but not all of them. In fact, a few years ago, actually this was maybe just in the last year, American Cancer Society released a study that essentially stated around up to 40% of cancers can be attributed to preventable risk factors. And so that I hope is enough data to support and to tell people that, you know what, there's something that I can do to affect my risk and I don't have to just leave it up to chance. And so what are those risk factors? The main risk factors are alcohol. Alcohol intake is still one of the biggest and throughout the world. And then smoking tobacco and obesity or excessive weight gain in the medical sense. Those are the three biggest. And within those, I mean, it can branch out into kind of related things such as living a sedentary lifestyle or not being active at all, which of course kind of feeds into kind of excessive weight gain and this whole pro-inflammatory state that essentially happens to people when they consume or do any of the risk factors.
What if a single cup of tea could hold a century of stories? Day Tea is a 5-generation family business crafting award-winning high mountain oolong teas in Taiwan since 1918. Grown at the highest elevations, every leaf is hand-picked, all natural, and nurtured without additives or herbicides. The result is an array of complex flavors that evolve with each steep, honored at tasting competitions in France and Japan. From premium loose leaf and tea bags to ready-to-drink cold brew bottles, every sip is an invitation to slow down, savor, and connect. Discover tea as it's meant to be experienced. Use code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, for 10% off at daytea.co. That's daetea.co. Valid until February 14, 2026. Brew it hot, brew it cold. Take a moment for you. Do you get red after a sip of alcohol? Well, I do. And it actually has a name. The alcohol flush reaction. And in my case, the infamous Asian glow. But something I didn't realize is that Asian glow isn't just a cosmetic issue, it's a real health risk, linked to increased cancer risk and poor alcohol metabolism. Thankfully, Join is here to help, an AAPI and woman-founded supplement brand that was created to be the most effective natural solution to support people with alcohol flush and recovery, while boosting overall health. Made with clinically studied, all-natural ingredients like glutathione, milk thistle, and B vitamins, you can now finally feel confident when you drink. Get 20% off your first order at jointhefun.com. That's JOYNTHEFUN.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Let's give the Asian glow a different meaning.
Two seasons ago, we had oncologist and hematologist Dr. Sanjay Juneja on. And we touched upon cancer, but we mostly talked about the biology of it and the treatment. Okay. But we didn't really delve much into the risk factors in itself and the lifestyle modifications that we can do to hopefully prevent cancer, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, and from most of the education that you do online, which I love, by the way, those videos of all this food, and I'm just like taking notes and saving the videos. And I think a big part of it is about diet and lifestyle, right? And I think a huge discourse online as well is when it comes to quote-unquote anti-cancer diets. I guess in that realm of the question of risk factors when it comes to cancer, are there truly diets that you can consider anti-cancer, or I guess helps prevent cancer? Or is it more about overall healthy eating patterns as opposed to specific types of food?
There's a lot to unpack there. Yes and no. I mean, I would say that I am a big, big fan of the Mediterranean diet and kind of similar diets that stem from that. And first of all, taking a step back, I actually don't like using the word diet just because it just sounds so, I mean, there's, again, with a lot of connotations to that word, and it sounds very restrictive. The reason why I talk a lot about the Mediterranean diet in my platform is, one, it's the most evidence-based diet out there. Most clinicians, allopathic physicians, are generally not opposed to that diet just because there's so much data to support it. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I think it really is more of like a philosophy as opposed to a diet. And the philosophy centers around a lot of the, if we call anti-cancer rhetoric online, which is, one, this incentivized position towards like ultra-processed foods. Mm. So really focusing on whole grains, whole foods, really focuses a lot on fiber. Fiber should be your best friend. I talk about it all day, every day. Fiber, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, legumes. I basically have memorized that and drilled that into my head because there's so many health benefits associated with them. And I can even kind of delve into that afterwards. So a lot of fruits and vegetables and really less or limiting processed meat and red meat. So those are kind of a bigger body of evidence that we're coming to talk a lot more about online and in the media, red meat, processed meat, and the Mediterranean diet kind of encourages the limitation of that. And instead, eating more chicken, poultry, and more seafood, and again, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, etc. So that's why I say the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, I love that concept as well of like not inhibiting. I think it's easy to find online a lot of conversations of like, cut this out completely or whatnot. And I think a lot of that discourse really centers around, like you said, red meat and processed meat. Curious, what is it about them that you think it's so linked to the talk about cancer? And I guess it brings us to the question of plant-based eating. Where do we see their role in cancer prevention as well?
I would just say one more thing about the Mediterranean diet is that I think that it's just the most sustainable diet out there. Because as you said, anytime someone tells me that they're just ultra one way or the other, for example, I'm full vegan or I'm full carnivore, anytime I hear that, it can, of course, when done in certain contexts, it can be beneficial in certain ways, though typically it's very difficult for most people to sustain said diet. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I really like just sustainable diets like the Mediterranean diet. To answer your question about red meat and plant-based. So red meat and processed meat essentially have certain compounds that studies associate with increasing cancer risk. So NOC and PAH, those are the two like acronyms, and N-nitroso compounds and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. But those are essentially the compounds that get released in both red meat and processed meat that then are pro-inflammatory and are carcinogenic. And so, for example, when we heat red meat, it releases said compounds and it can be pro-inflammatory and pro-carcinogenic. And that's why we talk about limiting both just red meat in general, and then furthermore, even processed meat as well. When it comes to plant-based, it really boils down to fiber, 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 which I talk about a lot.
That's our hashtag today, fiber.
I know, that is exactly. And also antioxidants, because meat, unfortunately, does not have antioxidants. And we know that antioxidants from, for example, berries, blueberries, people probably are aware of that, full of antioxidants, they decrease inflammation and then they lower cancer risk.
Yeah, I love that. Staying within this realm of diet and food, there's one very important question that I want to ask.
Yes.
And I think our co-Asian listeners and co-Asian food lovers, in a previous partnership with American Cancer Society, you mentioned that cancer and stomach cancer mortality are higher in the API community compared to the white population. And therefore, limitations on certain foods are quite encouraged. And one of them is being pickled foods. So I read the comments on that post. And the people want to know, what about kimchi?
Okay, that's hilarious. Thank you for bringing that old up. Well, for everyone at home, first of all, there is a difference between pickled foods and then there's fermented foods. So pickled foods use brine, vinegar, salt to create said food, said pickled food. And then the fermentation is a different process. It uses bacteria to help create probiotics. So good bacteria. They essentially are very gut forward, gut healthy. When it comes to from a cancer risk, there actually isn't, and this is so tricky because there isn't actually a consensus. Some studies, and most of these studies are really preclinical, meaning they're not done in humans. They're not large clinical trials that are assessing for the connection between cancer and kimchi. They're really more lab-based or animal-based. And so that just tells you that the strength of evidence, just it isn't quite robust. And so some studies suggest that it may increase cancer risk, especially in the context of GI cancers, so stomach, while others don't. So that's why I was a little bit less maybe in that post clear about, you know, do not for sure eat any kimchi. And in fact, I just posted about kimchi the other day. You know, I still believe in a lot of the health benefits and promoting gut health. I would just say, as with most things in life, it all comes down to moderation. And I still go out. I still go out and eat red meat, folks. I still go out and eat kimchi or whatever. But again, it comes down to moderation and just being a lot more intentional about what we're putting in our mouths. I think that's the first step. And I think people, they just focus on just being intentional. It can just go so a long way for people.
I love to hear that because I intentionally ate kimchi the other day. So I hope we'll be okay.
You know, I think we should be okay.
I hope so. Crossing my fingers.
Yes. You
know, when you're talking about a lot of these food and I guess this different ingredient and the fruit, a lot of it, I guess, are rooting from that word of anti-inflammatory. I'm curious, outside of just food and beverage, are there other lifestyle factors that can influence cancer risk? Let's say they can promote more inflammation than others?
Well, one of the biggest, I would say, is exercise from a beneficial standpoint. And I think it's one of the most potent, quote unquote, drugs that we can put in our bodies, because really it just releases a lot of hormones, a lot of beneficial hormones that decrease inflammation in the body. And in fact, there was a study that was published fairly recently in people who have colorectal cancer. They put them in like a monitored exercise program. And it was a pretty novel study because it was one of the first showing that exercise can actually decrease mortality, decrease recurrence, a lot of like cancer-based markers that we would want to see in clinical trials of people doing exercise. And so again, I'm all for exercise and people should try to avoid living a sedentary lifestyle because just like food, it can lower inflammation.
Yeah. I'm curious, what about sleep?
Yeah. So sleep, it's tricky. Sleep, I do think that there's so much more to learn in sleep. It's hard to probably assess. With that said, I have looked into studies related to stress and sleep, and people generally live longer or have better health outcomes when they have really good sleep. And I feel like, especially in the Western world, I mean, I can speak to New York City, we're probably not very good at that. We're probably not very good at prioritizing sleep or wellness, right? Like our society is just so fast-paced and we're focusing way too much on the next promotion, you know, the next step in getting into residency med school, and all these things that we're hyper focused on in our society are de-incentivizing sleep, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think New York is such a commuter city. Again, it's the city that never sleeps. And it's so true because you can walk around the city late at night and you'll see that people's lights are still open because they are not sleeping. Some are still working on their computers and whatnot. There's definitely a lot more that we need to learn about sleep. You know, outside now of sleep and in our beds and even our kitchen, I think the talk about cancer and cancer risk, especially recently, especially you see on TikTok a lot, is I guess the things that we use at home and even the things we encounter outside the house. And I guess I'm talking more about, let's say, objects like microplastics. I know you talk a lot during your recent podcast episode with our friend Susan Yara, the ever beautiful.
She's amazing.
Oh, I love her. I love going through Reddit sometimes because I just like reading what people think about a certain topic. And you can tell that people have a lot of opinions. I mean, even in Instagram DMs, people have a lot of opinions. And a lot of those opinions can sometimes lead to very beneficial educational moments or even golden nuggets of wisdom. But sometimes it can be also a huge hole of fear-mongering. And a lot of that is centered around also the talk of microplastics. What are microplastics and what's the current evidence that we have linking microplastics to cancer?
That is a good question. So microplastics are physical particles, very, very small particles that can be released from generally very one-time use plastic containers, for example. There is a lot of chatter online about the potential risks associated with them. I will say purely from a cancer perspective, unfortunately, at this current moment in time, we don't have enough evidence to say that it increases cancer risk. There are preliminary studies, preliminary thoughts that maybe potentially with the thought that it is pro-inflammatory. And again, everything centers around inflammation, but there isn't strong enough data. But I wouldn't be surprised if in the next decade, we would have more information. The reason why it's so hard is because right now we're talking a lot about it, thankfully, in the media, online, and that pushes all of us to kind of find more information out and do research to then have definitive statements. But we need to have a lot of people, one, a lot of time to be able to do those studies. So with that said, there are other non-cancer related issues related to getting microplastic exposure. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this previously, but there are actually several different studies that have shown after they do autopsies that people have microplastics or plastics seen in different parts of the body. Mm-hmm. In the brain, brain biopsies have been done, in the carotid arteries, which are the large arteries next to the neck. And then those then are in turn associated with poor health outcomes. For example, if you have a lot of plastic in your carotid arteries, one can imagine you have higher risk of stroke, heart attacks. And so, of course, who wants that plastic, regardless of any associated poor medical outcome, who wants plastic in their carotid arteries or their brains or their lungs, all of which have been noted in studies. But again, more specific health outcomes are a little bit less clear, at least at this point in time.
Yeah, and that's great to know because knowing that can hopefully dampen just a little bit of the major fear-mongering that happens in the chatter online. And I think that also applies to another topic, which are, I guess, that I've been also hearing quite recently as well, are forever chemicals, which are in the news a lot. What are they? Where are they found? Just like microplastics, what do we know about their role in cancer?
So the studies are a little bit more, or I would say, the association with cancer is much stronger. So what are forever chemicals? A lot of acronyms we use are PFAS or PFAS and PFOS, PFOS. They're essentially carbon fluoride, very, very strong bonds, chemical bonds, if we get it nerdy, strong chemical bonds of certain things that are hard to break down by the body. As opposed to microplastics, which are physical particles, they're typically more like chemicals. You can't really like pick them up. And so they are associated with a lot of things. Rather, when it comes to cancer, the two primary types of cancer that are most associated with forever chemicals are kidney cancer and testicular cancer. It comes down to hormone disruption. I know that's a buzzword online, but hormone disruption and pro-inflammatory states with, again, associated with like reactive oxygen species and then further causing issues with DNA and cancer proliferation. So yes, those are the two main cancers. There are some theories with other types, but the data really isn't as strong yet. And so how do we get exposed to said things? Unfortunately, there are a lot of things that we, on a day-to-day basis, are exposed to without, honestly, a choice, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But one of the main things is what I focus on is anything near the mouth, anything you're eating directly. So one of the most common things I talk about is cooking. So pots and pans. I use non-toxic cookware. I try my best to avoid said chemicals, because Teflon and a lot of different pans often will have forever chemicals, which are the purpose of them being there are they help avoid like sliding and like they help with flame. They insulate things. And that's why they're also used in, unfortunately, certain clothing. So our jackets, like certain jackets that are like waterproof and heat proof and those kind of things. From that standpoint, to be honest, it's harder, I think, to avoid because sometimes you're just like, you need a jacket and it's raining outside. And of course, cost is always an issue for all of us to really think about. But when it comes to clothing, this is my personal opinion, because it's so hard to avoid. And also because, as you can imagine, when you're touching a surface or touching a piece, an object, not near your mouth, the way it's absorbed is probably a lot less likely than you putting a spatula that you scraped on on a bad pan, right? Yeah. So that's how I kind of helped like kind of frame that in my head.
Tired of health fads and fleeting trends? Reprice Health takes wellness back to its roots, back to all natural remedies that have truly stood the test of time. Reprice is a holistic wellness brand bringing the ancient wisdom of traditional Eastern medicine into the modern world. Their daily gummies feature ancient Asian superfoods like ginseng, turmeric, and reishi mushrooms that are proudly sourced from KPC herbs, trusted by acupuncturists and herbalists for over 100 years. Whether to help you rest, focus, de-stress, or sleep, bring centuries of wisdom into your everyday health for 15% off at reprisehealth.com. That's R-E-P-R-I-S-E health.com with the code FRANZ. That's F-R-A-N-Z. One-time use and cannot be combined with other codes. Ancient wisdom, modern remedy. What if your routine felt less like a chore and more like a ritual? Rooted in Japan since 1946, Uka Beauty creates everyday practices that remind us beauty isn't just how you look, but how you feel. At the heart of their mission is regenerative beauty, from ingredients that restore biodiversity to refillable, circular packaging that reduces waste. Their iconic Sculpt Kanzen Brush transforms scalp care into full body relief, easing headaches, boosting circulation, and releasing jaw tension. And with innovative shampoos, nail oils, and serums, Uka restores balance and vitality with timeless Japanese sensibility and craftsmanship. Join the mission of turning care into impact. In collaboration with Rom Spa, you can get 15% off your first order at ukabeauty.com. That's ukabeauty.com with the code FRANZ. That's F-R-A-N-Z. One-time use only and cannot be combined with other codes.
Sometimes when I eat out with friends, right, and they serve some food and maybe a part of it, or even when we're like grilling, let's say barbecue during the summer, and you see a little of the charred part of the meat. Mm-hmm. And I remember my friends just look at it and like, that's cancer right there.
Yeah, I mean, the charred foods, even vegetables, people don't realize this, right? There's a lot of like meat people talk about online, like, oh, charred meats, but also charred vegetables can increase cancer risk too, right?
Yeah, I guess it's great that people are becoming more cognizant of the world around us and the things around us, that I guess more of a conscious wellness living kind of state. And it makes me wonder too, because I remember when I was young and I would be waiting in front of the microwave waiting for the food to finish heating up, and I remember my grandma would be like, don't stand in front of the microwave, like you're gonna get cancer. And I feel like this has been an ongoing discussion about so many things, right, throughout the years. And I think especially more now as we gain more access to, I guess, information, and definitely within our field of more evidence-based data. But I guess for the general public, also like what social media says, what sometimes what influencers say, right?
Right.
Sometimes it's all about that 3-second hook from someone who has no education or training about this. I'm curious, how does that make you feel as a trained and educated professional when you see an automatic viral moment of filtered information when it's not factual at all?
I mean, first of all, I mean, there was a lot of why I started what I'm doing now on social media, because it's just so easy to fall prey. And again, my background coming from humble beginnings and the whole immigrant story, etc., it is very easy to fall prey to people who are trying to sell you something mm-hmm. and are just much more charismatic or much more, I don't know, have a whole team to support their videos to look mm-hmm. cool or whatever and go viral. And so I just think it's just so unfortunate that the people who fall for these clearly misinformation and disinformation, right? Both people purposeful spread of wrong information, disinformation. It's unfortunate because people who are hurting the most are people from underserved backgrounds.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's going to strike a nerve with me even more. And honestly, the other thing I think about is sometimes people don't even intend to, even if they're coming from a credible place, like we all learn. I think that's the one thing about social media that is very hard is that people don't realize that one is very new, right? Like the idea of the influencer isn't like decades long. But the other is that influencers have done this for several years or even longer. They themselves are growing in the process, both as a human being or how they want to come across online, or information evolves and they're not really able to keep up with the health information that rapidly progresses. And so people are quoting a video they did 2 years ago and then using it as, you know, something that is fully credible when they themselves aren't even sure anymore. And so I feel like that's kind of like, I know it's a big and hard topic to address, but I feel like that's just like the reality of social media. Like our society isn't really ready to be able to figure it out.
Super agree. And I guess because of that, whether it's misinformation or disinformation, I think at the end of the day, there's just so much information online. It's like sometimes so hard to navigate as well, right? Even if there's like something new that came out, especially for the general public, right? It might be hard to navigate what's actually factual or what's evidence-based. I know a byproduct of misinformation is not just fear, but sometimes it tampers with someone's quality of life, right? Because they become so super apprehensive of what they do or what they shouldn't do. I guess within this realm and this talk about cancer in itself and cancer risk, because of so much information online and on our phone or computer, how can people realistically reduce their exposure to more inflammatory chemicals or, I guess, more risk factors when it comes to cancer without feeling overwhelmed and without feeling just super apprehensive about every micro thing that they do?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, first of all, I just wanted to say that people like you, thankfully, are willing and passionate about learning and spreading information from a lot of different people and a lot of different experts, and willing to take that and grow from it as well. And so I think that's the first step for a lot of people here in terms of how do we prevent the spread of misinformation? How do we learn from it? And those are the people that I, this is my personal opinion, would trust more. Right. No one can learn and know everything. No matter who, what expert says something about some topic, there's always room for growth, which is why I love medicine, because that I grow all the time. And so to answer your question, I think that when it comes to the idea of not being so overwhelmed with everything, all of the things in social media and the media and all the scare tactics, etc., I try to take things one step at a time. Choose one thing, focus on that, chew on it, literally and figuratively, maybe. And then try to evolve after that, because it's really hard. I mean, there's so much, you know, I always hear in the comments, people say, well, everything causes cancer. Everything causes it now. Like, what do I pay attention to? What do I focus on? It's hard. And me, I'm in this world. This is my whole world. Medicine is my world, both my social media and my other professional job. Yeah. But even I get overwhelmed, right? So I can only imagine for people who aren't in healthcare. So I would just say, take one thing, focus on that. Then another day, another thing. We can't be perfect. Yeah. We know that. Like, to err is human, and we just have to figure out how to do things in bite sizes, because every little bit counts.
Yeah, I love that. I think you're right. That bite size and that very first step approach of even just like acknowledging, okay, this is, I guess, one thing I want to change today or one thing I want to modify today. I mean, now you are kind of like a beacon of education for so many people online, right? Like, I'm sure so many people run to your content when they are wary or unsure about specific information, or if they're worried about something. I'm sure your content and your videos, especially armored by your expertise and your background, I'm sure it's such a light for so many people. When I was a teenager, I remember always being like, well, should I be scared of this? Or should I not do this? Will this hurt me in the long run when it comes to my health, knowing that I come from, you know, a family of so much sickness. Like, again, my dad had like lymphoma, and my grandma had leukemia, and my aunt had like uterine cancer. So I feel like, and then hyperlipidemia there, hypertension here, but also Filipinos, right? But adobo. Anyways, so I mean, I guess I remember being that young, and I'm always like, who do I listen to, right? And you are that person for so many people now. How about your younger self? If you could speak directly to your younger self, or even someone just starting out about their health, whether young or maybe a little bit later in life, what to that one piece of maybe not just prevention advice, but just health advice that you would give that person who's so apprehensive about their health and the world around them?
I would say that it is okay to not be perfect off the get-go. Because I feel like for a lot of people, we are so focused on being perfect. And the second we don't, we deviate, then we are like, oh, well, you know, I messed up already. I guess I, you know, why do I have to care now? And so then it just almost like you go backwards and you care even less. And so I think just allowing ourselves to have grace. And if I told that to myself, because I'm going to say it, I'm a perfectionist, I'm very type A. I care a lot about everything I do in life, including my diet and health. And honestly, in the very beginning, I'm sure there was a lot of expectation in myself, especially being like a young med student or whatever. Like, I feel like whether it be career advice or health, you know, thinking about my own health, I feel like I would just tell my younger self that it's totally okay. It's like you can chill and you can take a step back and feel comfort in that you kind of also just have to trust the process. Trust the process that, like, you know that, for example, me, I know that I am interested and passionate about health, and I don't have to have it all figured out off the get-go. You can learn slowly but surely, and you can go in time and become a better person to who you are today.
I love that so much. You know, the topic of health can be, again, so grand and so complex, and it is, right? And it can be sometimes so scary, and even though it's freeing, but it can also be so limiting at times, depending on how you look at it, right? But talking to you, and I'm sure how many people listen to you, and just talking about health, not in a condescending and judgmental way, but it's more of like just full of grace and acceptance that we're all in different journeys when it comes to our health, just feels like a warm blanket on top of me, just listening
so sweet.
To you.
I mean, I want to hear your answer to that. What would you tell your younger self?
What could I tell my younger self? I think I would tell myself that it's okay to ask others for their advice because they probably went through the same exact thing or a figment of the same experience. And so even though you might seem like you're alone and you're the only one who experiences this when it comes to your health, actually, you may not be alone, right? And you are not alone, right? And I think that's also the beautiful thing that I see now within our space in social media, where I guess these conversations make people realize that, oh my gosh, it's not just me, right? I'm not alone. So I guess that's what I would tell my younger self, is that it's okay to seek for help and advice from other people.
Yeah. That's wise. You're wise.
Wow, thank you so much. Dr. Tim, it was such a treat and such an honor to sit down with you today and just talk about health and just quality of life, right? Especially in the world that we're living in now. Sometimes it's all about just living and living to the fullest. And I love how you package that message in your content and just empowering other people to make informed decisions about their day-to-day. Such an honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And also thank you for having your podcast. I think it's really inspiring so many people, right? Like the topics around health and just like being a better person in every facet. I think you're doing exactly what you should be. Thank you for having me, really.